You're listening to The Mumcast, the best weekly comic book podcast recorded in Southampton, England on Thursday nights. In our 239th episode, we talk about this week's comics, and this week we have two spotlights. I'll be talking about Kochi Wanaba, and James will be talking about Akira.
I think that was flawless pronunciation.
That was great! What was wrong with that? Around the mic tonight are...
Hello, I'm Nick.
Hello, I'm James.
Hello, I'm James.
What did I do wrong, James?
Nothing, you did nothing wrong, that was flawless.
The problem I have with this whole conversation is that I'm going to cut it so that you said it completely flawlessly. So, no, you said it fine, but you stumbled over it the first... It doesn't matter.
I was going to say one word in front of the other.
Yeah. No, it's fine. It's okay. Okay. I'll cut all that out.
Good.
And then I'll leave this bit in and it'll be really confusing.
I get fed up with having to sort of judge my performance based on Nick's mystery editing choices. It's very difficult and very stressful, Nick.
I get fed up having to make mystery editing choices, but after this many episodes, apparently this is where we still are.
If only the listener knew the stress that I have to perform under every week, they'd have a moderate amount of sympathy. Possibly.
And then they'd realise that there are people starving, dying of cancer, and there's war, and they won't care about you, James.
All of which are happening in Peterborough right now.
That's true. Peterborough is the epicentre of the third world.
My old hometown, one of my old hometowns that I lived in for a couple of years, is every time you see those lists of UKIP councillors who've said and done awful things, there are at least three of them in a town I lived in before I lived in the town that I lived in before I lived here.
How long's the list?
It's quite a long list, but they're all kind of in Lincolnshire and around Peterborough and around Ramsey, Cambridgeshire, which is where I used to be. I'm not surprised. People who live in places that have fewer immigrants are understandably more scared of immigrants because immigrants are kind of like vampires. They're a lot less scary once you have to deal with a couple of them. I think that's how vampires work. Immigrants are like aliens from the film Alien.
Don't you just fall in love with vampires and go, I want to have your vampire babies?
That's how I feel about immigrants.
Yeah. Kind That's of. Good. Well, hopefully
that's how my wife
soon.
Felt about immigrants. Well, this immigrant. Yeah, baby.
You're not an immigrant. You are the child of immigrants.
I'm a first-generation immigrant. I looked it up on Wikipedia because I was trying to prove a point to someone on Facebook.
You're second generation, aren't you?
Apparently first-generation immigrants are either people who came over here or people who were the first generation born over here. I'm pretty
that
sure.
That doesn't make any sense.
I'll look it up.
I'm sorry. I have to leave.
Why?
Well, I didn't realise you were a first-generation immigrant.
How are your weeks, guys? I'm going to look this up.
Well, welcome back, Jane. It's nice to have you back. How have your weeks been?
Okay, I'm only here for 1 week and then I'm jet-setting. Next
Where are
week.
You going?
Nowhere. I'm doing more boring things with work.
Oh, man.
I have spent an extraordinary amount of my time sticking labels on things.
Mm. I can testify that this is true.
Yeah.
Testify!
And I think over thousands of items by the end of next week.
I've been using labels this week, but I think I've only used about 20.
I've used lots.
And it was for personal use.
Oh, it's work. I don't use labels in my personal life. I have a rule.
You have a rule? Do you have post-its in the house?
Yes.
Post-its are okay, because post-its fucking
don't you
rot.
Use them, though. You get them. You're like, what am I going to use this for?
To make makeshift arm feathers.
Oh, yes. Yeah, so you can like layer them. Human bird Samson type thing.
Yeah.
That's not Samson. Who is it? Kifly? Samson shaved all his hair off.
The angel.
Icarus.
Oh.
You're thinking of Icarus.
But also the angel from the X-Men. And Superman, he can fly, but he doesn't have wings.
You're only
it's
saying angel from the X-Men because you've been listening to the excellent Rachel and Miles explain the X-Men, aren't you?
Funnily enough, yes. That's exactly why he's on my mind. I'm thinking a lot about the original five X-Men at the moment. and also kind of feeling like I need to watch some of the X-Men cartoons. But I think that's entirely I've been incepted.
I started doing that after listening to that episode of Rachel and Miles Explain the X-Men, and I'm here to tell you, those 90s X-Men cartoons are fucking awful.
Yeah, I figured. Did you know that the Batman animated series and the 90s X-Men cartoon were airing at the same time?
Yes, I do, because I listen to the excellent Rachel and Miles Explain the X-Men.
Which show are we on?
Momcast.
A first generation, a foreign-born citizen or resident who has immigrated and been naturalised in a new country of residence, or a naturally born citizen or resident of a country whose parents are foreign-born.
What? This ambiguity
is captured and corroborated in the Oxford English Dictionary's definition of generation. So it's captured and corroborated.
But that doesn't make any sense. Surely that makes you second generation. You can't have first generation then first generation, can you?
I refer you to the Oxford English Dictionary, who have captured the ambiguity of this and corroborated it.
So they confirmed it's ambiguous.
Yeah, they've confirmed that it doesn't make any sense. That's what they mean by
that. I'd expect more. They've given up. Has Oxford just given up?
No, it refers.
Is it because of the vampires?
I've been to Oxford. It feels like it's given up.
What it says is,
deal with bikes.
Oh God. Okay. Designating a if you really want me to go on.
No.
Designating a member of the first or second, etc., generation of family to do something or live somewhere, especially designated. I see. It's
no,
I just don't
about
really
it.
Understand.
I'm just going to not accept it and say that you're second generation.
And then there's a word that don't you dismiss my lived experience. God damn you, you racist. No, you're not a racist.
Well, a little bit.
No, it's a xenophobic, I think.
Oh, okay, sorry.
I don't think you
I'll
are.
Say, would it be xenophobic?
Well, don't you? You've got a bit of that anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
A bit doesn't of what, xenophobia?
Doesn't it make you first generation?
I am probably third generation.
Are you halfy-halfy, though?
My mother was born in the UK.
Oh, okay.
Yes, you're at least second generation, maybe third. And you're halfy-halfy, aren't you?
Yeah, I am half. Not pure.
Halfy-halfies are super-powered. Well, halfy-halfies are better than...
What's my superpower, then?
I don't know.
Do
but
I discover it soon?
Apparently, if you're part of an ethnic mix, apparently children who are born of an ethnic mix have... the more I say it, as much as it was explained to me in a very scientific way, it sounds less scientific.
Children who were born during revolutions have the superpower of not being fooled.
And the seventh son of a seventh son of a seventh son has magical warlock powers.
True. And has to buy a lot of Christmas presents.
Yep.
Yeah, an awful lot, yeah. Christmases are a nightmare for seventh sons of seventh sons.
So anyway, how are your weeks? Have we already done that?
Oh, I think Jane's done hers, and I'm waiting to do mine.
I haven't done mine.
Thanks for being present.
I haven't done mine. He was busy trying to verify his existence to us.
Which got dismissed almost straight away.
Well,
I'm glad he did that. That went well.
What else are we doing? Oh, playing GTA 5.
Cool. Okay, good.
And I have watched...
This is a fucking roller coaster.
Two episodes of the new series of In the Flesh, which I don't know if any either.
I haven't seen the first series. I need to watch it.
It's really, really good. I really enjoyed the first series, and it got commissioned for another series, and it's already aired. It's only a mini series, three episodes. It's all on iPlayer, listener, so you should check that out. The concept is about zombies who have risen from the grave. So it's not
risen.
Like risen from the grave. Thank you, Nick. So they haven't been bitten and infected in that kind of sense to begin with. And then they're cured.
Huh?
Yeah.
Like
they're cured.
Over wood.
And it's something, I think they call it like partial death syndrome.
Okay, yeah, I'll buy that.
Yeah, it's good. Really good.
There seems to be a real effort to humanise zombies going on at the moment.
Because
that's what that film was about the guy and the girl that's
what?
all told from the zombie's point of view. What's it called?
Warm
it was
Bodies.
An American film. Yeah.
Oh, I really like Warm Bodies.
I liked it.
This is more of a interesting concept that if someone you love and care about has died and then comes back to life as a zombie but then gets cured, how do you deal with that?
Especially if you've moved on to someone else.
Yeah.
That'd happen.
And also, what if they died in a not very nice way,
like their penis got cut off?
Would that kill you?
Well, it could if you were left alone for a long time. It might go gangrenous. You can die from pretty much any wound.
I know, but...
if you're left in the basement for long enough. This moves on. This actually segues quite nicely into one of the things that sometimes concerns me. So I do want to ask you guys this. How long... If you are in a relationship and you very much love the other person, but then tragically one of you has to leave, as in not being alive anymore.
So die?
Yeah.
Okay.
How long is it appropriate to grieve for and have your heart broken for before it's okay to start, like, dating again?
For as long as you want.
Until you get horny.
It's a bit ambiguous.
I think
that's a bit ambiguous. Because I could probably, because death, tragedy makes me horny. That sounds wrong. Basically, when confronted with death, sometimes our way of coping is to think about new life in... Or masturbating.
Why is it ambiguous? Surely it's as long as you want to. No one will judge you.
I don't think that's true.
Well, if they did, they're arseholes.
Okay, good. No, that's a good enough answer.
Yeah.
I put it to you that your question was rhetorical and you've already thought about the answer in some depth.
I have the start of my zombie apocalypse plan.
Yeah?
Yeah. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, go on.
Okay, you sure?
Well, kind of. How long is it?
It's not that long. It's only a start. I can't get past a certain point. I have a dilemma. Okay, so... Oh, no, it is quite horrible. Oh, I'll tell you anyway. Okay, so are you okay with this, James? Can I say it? You're in it. You're in my...
Sweet.
No, I'm in it, I'm interested. I'm nothing if not narcissistic.
That's true. You are nothing if not narcissistic or narcissistic.
Right, so the scenario is... they're not spry zombies, so it's the slow kind.
Oh, the traditional kind.
Yeah,
shuffless.
The bitey kind. And
the shambling death.
I have two scenarios, one where life partner Steve, it's pretty irrelevant, one where life partner Steve is a zombie and one where he's not, because of course I would be fine.
The tone and themes of a movie, depending on whether or not you lose your partner at the beginning or you end up as a family trying to survive through it.
Okay.
If it's a film.
All right, I don't know about real life. This is just Jane's brain. So if...
There's your title.
Go with dead first.
Okay, so if he becomes a zombie, I will lock him in the bathroom and make sure he's actually a zombie. After a few hours, if he's still a zombie, then I'll kill him.
Okay.
If he's not dead, then he'll come with me wherever I go. So
that's the difference.
That's the difference between the two. So my first port of call would be to go to James's house, and in my scenario, both James and his wife are zombies because they would do everything they can to protect their daughter.
Not if they got tended to zombies while they're asleep or something.
I know, but you would lock her in a room. In a room, and I would have to. I couldn't bring myself to kill you two, so I'd lock you in the garden, and I would rescue Scarlett and the dogs. And I'd take Nicola's car, because it's better than my car.
It's a nice car, it's all right.
But where do I go from there? Because do I go and rescue my mum and my brother, who live an hour's drive away?
They're almost definitely dead already.
Yeah, but not only that. But I think my brother would survive. I think my mum might not. Well, I don't know, she might do.
I need to clarify something. So in this scenario, you would lock James and his wife in the garden because you wouldn't have the heart to kill them. But you'd wait for about half an hour to check that Steve was actually a zombie and then kill him.
I was talking to Steve about it. He'd want to be killed.
Okay, cool.
It's verified it. James might say he'd want to be killed, but I don't think he'd want to be killed. So if I lock them in the garden, someone else might kill them and then it's not in my head.
He gets to, like, wander around thinking
Nicky.
Only about eating for the rest of his
he'll
life.
He'll be with the love of his life as well. So, you know, that's a nice thing.
I thought you said you'd chuck me out there with Nicola.
Yeah.
That sounds that what I just said sounded a little bit bitchy. What I'm suggesting is that if given the opportunity to spend the rest of a half-assed unlife where you don't have to go to work.
Half-assed?
Yeah, you don't
you wouldn't even bother at being dead.
You don't have to go to work. You are obsessed with eating, but you never put on any weight because you're dead. So it's guilt-free
eating. How do you know you don't put on
any weight? Because they don't, do they? They can't. I think the poo just... I think eventually what will happen is your stomach will just explode.
Well, no, you just
decay. The food will go through your esophagus and all of that or whatever, and then it'll just fall out of your stomach. Being a zombie fucking rocks.
Well, yeah, but then you'd never feel satisfied.
Well, but, I mean, that's kind of how we relate to eating anyway, I think,
isn't it? You are describing my life in so many ways already. I think I might be a zombie.
Do I flee to the Isle of Wight?
Oh, fucking yeah. Yeah, that'll keep you safe.
You'd really want to go...
Well, we're just thinking it's close and it's remote.
And it's an island. You'd really want to go somewhere where you could easily identify if people were zombies or not as they were approaching, though.
Yeah, the nearest island would be miles away, wouldn't it? I could sail.
Go to Hawaii.
That's too far. And I think there might be zombies there. There will be zombies there. It's Hawaii.
But at least they'd be laid back.
I could go to Brownsea Island.
What's your concern about Hawaii being too far? Would you be in a hurry?
Yeah, but I wouldn't have... Yeah, I'd be in a hurry to leave the UK, but I may not have all the resources I'd need to get as far as Hawaii. So I don't know. Do I go save my mum and brother? Risk the roads being clogged up?
Roads would be all clogged up.
Yeah. Or just take myself and Scarlett and maybe Steve, if he's still alive, to safety.
So Steve's been included in this?
If he's alive, if he's still a zombie.
He's happy with the idea of you two having an almost full-grown kid just dumped into your relationship. It's quite a big step, having children.
I hadn't even thought of that part.
No, well, you two really need to discuss this.
I just want to I'd want to rescue my friends.
Oh, yeah. Sure, but there's nothing worse for a child. There's nothing worse for a child than growing up in a situation where, you know, the people who are looking after them weren't really that fussed. They have misgivings. A child picks up on that stuff.
It'd be a different life, Nick. She'd have to learn to survive. I don't think she'd be that.
She'd just be grateful
that we came and got her and she wasn't a zombie. I haven't affected yourself and your lovely wife, Amy, because that's Amy would, whatever happened to you, Amy would be surviving with Noah.
If I wasn't zombified, she'd keep me around.
I think she'd take your jaw off, if I was a zombie, or not, she'd probably take my jaw off even if I wasn't a zombie, to be fair.
You know, stripped of the morality of the civilized world, the opportunity to have me around for my cuddles but not have to deal with my voice is probably, you know, she'd probably go for that. So James, how was your week?
It's all right. Young people smell nice, don't they?
Young people?
I know.
Except when they've shat themselves.
No.
What young people are you sniffing?
18 to sort of 26-year-olds.
Yeah, they smell
lovely.
Almost
universally, they all smell quite nice, don't they?
The boys are disgusting.
No, I don't agree. The boys do. They're sprays and their aftershaves and so forth. And I was thinking, I used to smell nice. I can't remember what age I was when I gave up smelling nice. Bet you used to spray deodorant at one time in your life. And now
I've never deodorised.
You probably barely wash.
I wash every day.
Apparently,
it's not enough, but...
Yeah.
I've started wearing my trainers. The trainers, when we were in Leeds at Thought Bubble, James wasn't there, so he wouldn't know about this. But I bought two pairs of trainers. One of the pairs of trainers has a hole in it because apparently my cousin says it happens when you're using them to drive, like sometimes on the brake pedal. They were the trainers I used during all of my driving lessons, and they've got that brake pedal rip. But I've been wearing them just because I can still wear them, and apparently they really, really smell when I've only been wearing them for 20 minutes to walk into work. So I'm going to have to stop doing that because I take them off while I'm sat at my desk, and then I spend the next 20 minutes worrying about the smell.
Oh.
So then I go out into the corridor and I waft them around a bit.
Why don't you just put them in a plastic bag and tuck them in your drawers?
I'm not entirely sure it isn't my feet that are the problem.
Oh.
So it's...
chicken and egg situation. Why don't you get some spray? Foot spray thing? A jig?
Yeah, I should really. Or I should just stop wearing these trainers because I don't think it happens in my other trainers.
Oh.
But that's my week anyway. We're about to talk about comics. If you want to talk to us about comics or anything, really, if you want to talk to us about feet or your zombie plan, I'd quite like to hear people's zombie plans. Maybe only the first stage, because that's plenty to hear, I think, isn't
it? It's very detailed and in-depth, my
first
stage.
How do you get out of town? I don't really need to hear about...
I mean, after that, it's like, who knows what's going to happen next?
Yeah, and you don't need to hear about you, like, setting up a farm or a community or becoming cannibals or something like that.
No, remote. Yeah. Away from everything.
But yeah, if you want to tell us that, that'd be great. You can talk to any one of the three of us on Twitter, or all of us if you like, on Twitter. I'm Nick Sight. Jane is?
Jane Mom.
James is?
Sparkly Vampire.
James Mom. And there's also the main Mom Comics account, which you can follow mainly if you want to get notified when the new episode goes up via Twitter, or if stuff gets posted on the Tumblr or any posts go up on the site. There's also John Mom. He's on Twitter and he's around somewhere as well. Probably at the comic book club in Southampton
with his friends.
Yeah,
his comic friends.
Splitter.
Oh man, now I feel bad for even bringing it up. We are also
no, don't.
We're also on Facebook and on Google Plus and on Tumblr. You can find links to all of those on the Mom Comics site. The Mom Comics site also contains all of our past episodes. How much do they cost to listen to, James?
They're free.
Yes.
Gratis.
Yes, they are. And a lot of them have show notes on them, which will tell you what each episode's about, so you don't have to listen to the whole thing to find out about a comic book that you're interested in. You can leave comments there. You can leave comments on Facebook. You can leave comments. You can leave feedback to us on Twitter. You can leave feedback for us on iTunes, which apparently is really good for us if you do it, or on Stitcher, which is something that we've just become a member of.
Stitcher, what's that, Nick?
It's a really nice podcast aggregation. So I best not do this because they might actually pay people to do this. I'll look into it. I'll look into whether
Stitcher
or not
Radio, where you can listen to us anytime using the Stitcher app.
Have you already done a deal?
Shh.
Oh, man. And
Stamps.com.
Where are we? No, we're not doing Stamps.com this week.
Hey, free scale. You can weigh drugs on it. And Stamps.com.
And the other thing you can do is you can send us emails. Our email address is?
Mumcast@gmail.com.
Correct, Jane. Thank you very much. You can send us emails. That's nice. If you've got a comic that you want us to review, you can send that and John might get round to reviewing it. He's quite good like that. You can also send us audio contributions for the show. I know we've got at least one for this week's show. We take audio contributions of 2 to 5 minutes long. You can record them on anything. We've had some really crap quality or sound ones, and some really good quality sound ones. We've had poems. I think we've had a song. We've definitely had at least one song. Mm. You can review a comic that you think we haven't really talked about as much as we should, or talk about a bit of comic news. Literally anything. We're just desperately trying to flesh out our content and get a diversity of voices on the show. So if you're from a marginalised group, that's probably even better, actually.
But no vampires.
No vampires, because we're not down with them. Everyone's got a limit on their tolerance, and vampires are our limit. You can also put something in James's mouth.
No!
James's mouth is a sacred, lovely, fragrant place, where sometimes if you have something you want to promote or something you want said, you can send us some copy. Copy is a posh media word for a bunch of words. You can send us some copy, maybe one side of A4 or something.
Yeah, that is about a minute.
You can give James a bit of direction as well if you want, and he will read it out on the show for you. Mm. Sometimes he'll even read through it without making any mistakes.
Really?
But we won't promise anything. Really? Should we talk about this week's comics?
Yeah.
Right. I think I've got some comics. So, 2000 AD this week, because I have to talk about 2000 AD, because there's some really good stuff in it this week. It's Prog 1882. That means that the longer we do this joke, the more likely I am to fuck it up.
Go on. Do it.
That means that it was fully created and written and drawn and published in the year 1882, burning up all of the resources of the year 1882 and beamed into our present, our hellish, hellish, futile present. It's really good at the moment, 2000 AD is. Shooter's Night finishes. That's the excellent John McCrae. John Wagner and John McCrae. That's right. It's two Johns. Yeah. That's what's confused me. John McCrae and John Wagner story about spree shootings. It's actually quite intense. Mega City 1 is such a heightened reality that it's really weird that they could take something that we kind of have to deal with, and it's horrifying when it happens in our present, and it'd still be horrifying there because they've got people being killed there all the time. Like, they've got massacres there all the time. So, but it's a pretty intense story, and it's really good. Indigo Prime persists as this beautifully rendered slice of weirdness. I'm not entirely sure where this story's going. It's not got loads of action. It's this... There's a Nazi who's helped them out before from a reality where the Nazis won World War II, and he knows he's dying. So because he's helped Indigo Prime before... They're helping him with his last wishes, his bucket list, and that's the drama. And it's kind of weird. They're not all on the same side of it. There's quite a wide cast of characters, and they all feel differently about it. Not sure where it's going to go, but it looks amazing. Lee Carter's art in it is amazing. Slain is oddly ace at the moment. There's a little bit of Pat Mills' standard philosophizing in it, but even that kind of works in this story. It's weird. This Pat Mills story, this book, sorry, Defoe at the moment, the Savage story, what's that called? The one about alternate England where we got invaded.
Oh, I can't remember.
You know the one, one.
I know
and,
the one.
And even ABC Warriors feel like actual stories about characters at the moment rather than it's like he's turned a corner on something and they're not all lectures, which is quite cool. And Tharg's Three Rillers was one of my favourites of those, written by Keck W with art by Vince Locke. Really nice, kind of creepy art. It's basically The Thing... The film The Thing, the John Carpenter film The Thing, but recast as this unusually specifically Soviet-era Siberian existential nightmare. It's really, like, creepy. It was proper creepy. I don't know if they got the history right. I'm sure they did. I'm sure it was very well researched and everything. Doesn't sound like it was very nice in Soviet-era Siberian Russia.
It depends what you're doing, I guess.
If you were in Siberian Russia... If you were in Siberia in a camp, probably not that great.
Depends what you were doing. If you're in charge of the camp, probably had a reasonably good life.
So from Pat Mills surprising me to another writer-oriented surprise, MPH, the initials MPH, which usually stand for miles per hour, but we're not yet sure what they stand for in this particular comic, but MPH number one, it's $2.99 from Image, and it's written by Mark Millar with art by Duncan Fragredo and colour art by Peter Doherty, or Doherty, Doherty or Doherty. If it's without a C, what is it? Doherty.
Yes.
With this and Starlight, I'm really having a confusing time at the moment because that means there are two Mark Millar books that I'm actually quite enjoying. That's drawn by Gorlan Parlov, I think, and this is drawn by one of my favourite artists. I love Duncan Fragredo's art anyway. I blame this on him learning to get out of the way of the artists because usually there are loads of Millar wrinkles that just don't really work for me. Lots of... jokes that I feel I've kind of grown out of because I'm not a 14-year-old anymore and stuff like that. There isn't that much of this in either of these books. They're very specific. Starlight's very much a Flash Gordon thing, and he knows that his artist's going to kick the ass off that, so he leaves it to them. And this isn't quite as well written or as sparsely written as Starlight is, but it's still... kind of, he relies on the artist to do an awful lot of the work. That said, it is slightly overwritten. There's lots of... It's a really fun idea. The idea is that there's this really likeable drug dealer that you meet. He's this young guy who he's working for this criminal, but he's decided he's got a plan. He doesn't intend to be a criminal for his entire life. He really wants to get legitimate as quickly as possible. He's saving like 80% of his earnings. He's kind of, any way I explain it, he's still going to sound like a criminal, but it's he's kind of presented because he's kind of narrating it some of the time. So from his point of view, he sounds quite nice. He really loves his girlfriend. He wants to start a proper business somewhere and get out of the game as quickly as possible. But he gets dropped in it and ends up in prison. And even there, he has a plan, but that plan gets like whipped out from under him. We've already had this superhero-y, superpower-y introduction right at the beginning that this is a world where there's been one instance of superpowers before, dysfunctional event where a guy suddenly got super speed, couldn't control it, and ended up in prison afterwards because he was just kind of out of control and screwy. So that's been introduced, but that was like 20 years before. And eventually, as is kind of given away by the covers of the comics and everything, eventually this power ends up finding its way to the young lad that we've been introduced to and has ended up in prison. There's not really anything here we haven't seen, and it even shares one conceit with sex criminals, because where in sex criminals, when they have sex, when they have an orgasm, everything freezes.
Yeah.
This, he's moving so fast, his brain starts moving so fast and he's able to move so fast that to him it appears that everything has stopped moving, which is kind of something they've done in the Flash comics a few times, but in this it's like him experiencing it for the first time. So there's lots of scenes of him walking through the prison and while everything's kind of frozen in place. Lots of stuff that if you were making a music video and had just discovered this technology, like they did in a Suede video back in the 1990s, you'd do lots of this. But I've never seen Duncan Fegredo drawing scenes like this, so it's really nice seeing them, even though they're not really anything new. But the story clips along quite nicely, and the art is absolutely incredible. What's really peculiar for me, though, is seeing Duncan Fegredo's art, which I love all of the stylistic flourishes that he has. I've always really liked his art. It reminds me of sort of, it seems very heavily influenced by Egon Schiele and artists like that. So it's very fluid and everything. And it doesn't look that much like his art. And I don't know if that's that he's doing something different or that Peter Doherty is doing such a complete job on the colour art that it's transforming the art to be something else. It's not better than Duncan Fegredo is normally, but it is really weird because the combination of the two of them seems to make this third artist that I think is really easy on the eye. It's really nice to read. I liked it a lot. It's only $2.99, so I'll probably be around for the second issue. Someone we... no, a close friend of the show actually said to me in private messages the other day, which is why I'm not saying his name, he's come to think of Mark Millar as not much more than a fundraiser for artists that he really likes. And I think that's quite a healthy way to look at what he does. He works with some really, really good artists and presumably makes them quite a lot of money because they get a share of it and then they make get a film made normally of their work. So... yeah, okay. I don't normally like his writing, but if this is bearable, I can stomach buying it if it means that Duncan Fegredo gets a bit of money. I saw a trailer for the film The Secret Service, which is also based on one of his comics, and it looks fucking awesome.
I've not seen it, but I've heard good things.
Colin Firth as like a spy, super spy, who takes this chavvy kid off the street, Samuel L. Jackson with a lisp, Michael Caine. My goodness, it's very exciting. I'm not suggesting that Samuel L. Jackson with a lisp is Michael Caine. I understand that sentence wasn't that easy to pass, but it was funny and good. It looks really good. Funny and action-packed. Anyway.
Stick that on your poster.
Yeah, stick that on your poster, Mark Millar. I don't think he's going to be using anything I said on the poster. He probably hasn't got to this far in the review.
He only downloads it for the first 20 minutes.
I think he does. I think he does. He checks the show notes, sees if there's going to be anything interesting being spotlighted that week, and then moves on. The other comic I bought this week was The Last Broadcast. It's $3.50 from Archaea. I bought it because, despite never having heard anything about it, it looks gorgeous. It's a totally gorgeous looking book. It's written by Andre Sirangelo with art by Gabriel Iumazark, whose name I recognise from probably DeviantArt or Tumblr or somewhere. I think I've seen them doing beautiful drawings before. I don't think I've actually seen them doing a comic before, if that makes any sense. This is the first part of a 7-part comic. It's subtitled an Urban Exploration Adventure, which is kind of, it's this really weird story that seems to be centering on, not weird, really intricate and interesting story that seems to be centering on this guy who's a really, he's a struggling magician who doesn't take people, he's a struggling magician and writer who doesn't take the advice of his friends particularly well, seems to kind of get in his own way quite a lot, and so he's struggling. And at the same time, he's obsessed with this Houdini type magician who disappeared like 100 years before in the middle of a stunt. Well, he didn't disappear; he died during a stunt, but everyone thinks he faked his own death. And at the same time, there are these two explorers, like urban explorers, who are rooting around in the sewers underneath or the tunnels underneath the city that they're in, and find this thing, this mysterious place that has all of these artifacts from the same period as the magician disappeared in. So there are a few different strands going on there. It's so beautifully designed, and it's got gorgeous art. It's got gorgeous art, and the writing is really good as well. The characterization of everyone is really good, and it's an interesting story. But the problem with the writing is the same as the problem with the art, in that it's the art's sometimes a little bit too detailed and stylized to tell a really clear story. Sometimes you can see very clearly what's going on, but it jumps around so much between characters and situations that you're being introduced to for the first time, that sometimes because it's so stylized, you're not entirely sure what's going on. And the writing's really interesting and assured. It's really confident. And as I said, the characters are really fun. They're quite well written. They're interestingly flawed, but they wisecrack at each other as well. But it kind of uses one narrative wrinkle too many to be perfectly readable. Not only is it jumping back and forwards like really regularly between these two different stories with you not really knowing how they're connected, but there's like, it's got a framing flashback and you're not entirely sure, you're thinking about that the whole time you're reading it, and so it can be a little bit confusing for a first time read, and the art and the writing being similar in that regard can be a little bit confusing. Having said that, it's really, really good, and it's really interesting. The story's interesting enough, and the art's interesting enough, and the characters are interesting enough that I'm going to do the legwork or the reading work or the head work to make sense of it. So that's kind of good. I just don't know if everyone's going to have the patience for it. This might be the reader. This might be one of those cases where the reader's the one at fault. I understand that. It's just that, and I know I've talked about it with other books before, there's a lack of restraint in the art and the writing, and it just makes it a little bit harder to get a proper handle on. But it's got so much good in it that I'm going to keep trying because it's lush. God, I mean, the cover's amazing, yeah. But like the interior art is really nice. It's kind of this weird sort of scratchy, sometimes the facial features, sometimes manga influence, but the amount of detail in it is really stylized and really nice. Oh, I like it.
Thanks, Nick.
Thank you.
Max Barnard, he's got a lovely voice. Max Barnard, comics are his choice.
Hello, monkeys. It's Max again, and I made a bit of a tit of myself last week, didn't I? Because I talked about Cyclops by Greg Rucka and Russell Dorterman, and I said it was by Greg Pak. And they're both very good Gregs, much better Gregs than the pastry Gregs, or the, I can't think of any other sort of Gregs. But that's still quite a mistake to make, and as a way to correct my faux pas, this week I'm going to talk about an actual comic book by Greg Pak, and then maybe I'll mention about how Greg Rucka's a good writer. That'll probably balance it, right? And I'm already about 30 seconds in, so I should go ahead. This is Eternal Warrior Volume 1 from Valiant Comics, and it's by Greg Pak, mostly drawn by Trevor Hairston, but it's also got bits by Clayton Crane and Diego Bernard. Not Barnard like me, Bernard. It's a key difference. And this is about an immortal, but not like one who can't get hurt, but like an immortal, like he lives for ages. And his name is Gilad Anipada. And so he's like, he fights for the goddess of Earth, whatever, like he follows her will and does various killy-fighty things in the name of the Earth. And he's got two children, Mitu, who is a man who dies, and his daughter Sharon, who's a bit kill-crazy and actually killed Mitu. It's all a bit weird, and it's like it starts in ancient Mesopotamia, and it's like, oh yeah, they're gonna fight, and Sharon's a bit mental because she's got an X at the start of her name, and Mitu's very humble and his father's son or whatnot, and it all goes a bit wrong despite the appearance of elephants, and so Gilad, I guess, gives up on the whole fighting for the Earth thing and moves on to try and have a normal life till Sharon turns up and's like, nah, Dad, I fucked up. And she did. And they go off to go and kill some gods, because what else do you do in that sort of situation? I am massively glossing over the plot, but this is 4 issues in the volume, and it only costs $7.50, so it's a good price. But the key is, it's a very good comic. I'm not massively into Trevor Hairston. I think he worked on X-Men Deadly Genesis, which wasn't the prettiest book in the world, but it wasn't a bad book either. And I'd say I like him more than last week's artist, Russell Dortman. But the true stars, artistically speaking, are the fill-ins. You have Clayton Crane does some flashback sequences set in the Old West, and Clayton Crane's an artist who draws very gloomy, murky stuff I can't see, but you stick him in a sunny environment, and he shines with glistening CG art, and it's really nice in this, and Diego Bernard draws very pretty women, so the two of them do really nice in it, and I hope all three of them continue to contribute to the title as the next volume comes out, whenever that is, next month maybe, and the month after that. I don't really follow this stuff. And Pak is absolutely stunning on the writing. He's telling a story about characters I shouldn't give a damn about, and it skirts cliche a lot. Sharon's mental kill crazy, she's a bit snarky, and she wears trousers. I don't know, that sounded sexist, but I feel like it's some sort of Hollywood cliche, right? And Gilad's a very noble warrior, because he is. He refuses to kill women and children, and that's his downfall at nearly every step of the way in the story. But they're still very believable and interesting characters with their own struggles. The way this volume ends, you truly feel for all the characters involved. It hits you hard. It might not be my favourite comic I've picked up in recent history, but that might just be because I picked up a lot of stuff by David Hine in recent history, and I should talk about that in the coming weeks as well. But no, Greg Pak's Eternal Warrior, Valiant Comics, quite good. It's definitely, I've read some of Bloodshot, Archer Armstrong, Quantum and Woody, and Shadow Man, and this is at least as good as Shadow Man, which is the best of the bunch as far as I'm concerned, at least from the volume ones I've read. So, heartily recommended. Oh, quick, I best mention some good stuff about Greg Rucka. Greg Rucka, quite good. Wrote Batwoman when it was really good. That was nice. And Gotham Central, I guess that's connected to this TV show coming out. I mean, that's cool too. He's actually one of my favourite writers in Big Two Comics. I really liked his Punisher run. Does a lot of women. Strong women. I mean, that sounds fetishistic. Maybe I should.
Did anything happen this week?
Yeah. Rob.
No.
Title for the new Batman versus Superman film was revealed, and people decided that that was something that would make them angry.
Wasn't it just Batman versus Superman?
No.
What was it?
Now it's called Batman vs. Superman.
Justice Dawns.
Justice Dawns. I think part of the problem...
Isn't that just a
film? No, the dawn of... I think it's the dawn of justice or something. And it's clearly like teasing
dawn
that they're...
Dawn of justice.
It's clearly teasing that they're planning on doing like a Justice League movie or something, isn't it? But I...
Justice League.
It feels a little bit like the people who were already looking for excuses, who'd already made their minds up about the film are taking the piss out of it, and the people who are already kind of keeping an open mind but are getting defensive about it got defensive about it. That seems to be what's happening. It seems like anything that comes out about this film before it comes out and then after it comes out as well, it's become very factional, hasn't it?
Storm in a teacup.
I haven't seen anybody moaning about it. I've seen people moaning about people moaning about it.
Yeah.
The only exposure I've had is the sad Batman pictures, which
those
were
are brilliant,
hilarious. So
and sad Keanu. Sad Batman and sad Keanu.
Sad Keanu one is quite sad, but sad Batman one's just funny.
But I don't think there's been a still from any of the Batman films of the Batman costume that you couldn't look at and say, he looks a bit sad. He's fucking Batman. He always looks a bit sad.
He's not the jolliest. He's not the jolliest.
But he just never got over it. So, you know, that is sad.
It is. It is really sad. He's clearly got mental health issues.
Oh, I feel sorry for him and Keanu Reeves now.
I feel sorry for all of them. I feel sorry for all the poor little children.
So if you saw Batman eating a sandwich on his own on a bench, you'd go and sit next to him?
No, because who wants any of that? I feel sorry for all of the people I see sitting on their own in the street, but I'm not going to go strike up a conversation with them.
No, just sit next to them, so, you know, you don't have to say anything.
That's like a bottomless pit of despair that I can't afford to dangle my legs over the edge of.
No empathy.
No, that's true. It's absolutely right. I had it removed. It was tiring. It was fucking exhausting.
You kept sitting next to people you didn't know all the time. You just got nothing done.
Yeah, and most of them don't really appreciate it. A lot of them swear at you for no apparent reason. Yeah. Some of them touch you. It's weird.
Got to break the barrier, Nick.
Break the cycle.
Yeah, get to know them. Tell them it's going to be okay.
You weren't here when the Gotham trailer went out, so
no.
I wondered if you've seen it.
I haven't.
Oh, never mind then. I think it looks all right. But then I don't really care about the DC Universe anymore, so it's not going to disappoint me. I quite like the look of Arrow as well. Have you guys been watching that?
No.
I'm just creating dead end after dead end in this conversation. This is awkward.
Yeah. I've been watching Hannibal.
Did you see the first couple of episodes of, I want to say, Pretty Deadly, and that's not what it is. Penny Dreadful.
No.
Same initials.
Is that good?
Looks quite nice. I like it. It's got Eva Green.
Mm-hmm. I love Eva Green.
It's got Josh Hartnett.
Yes, I loved him for a while.
It's got one of the two weird brothers, one of whom is in Attack on the Block, and the other one, who looks exactly the same as him, is in a TV series that Amy and I watched, and I can never remember the name of it, so that's helpful in this
Casualty?
Instance. No, it was about these people who were put in the witness protection program, and they went to this strange town where everyone was in the witness protection program, and it's kind of the most amazing thing. It was really weird. It was a bit like The Prisoner sort of a place.
Yeah.
But what's quite odd about it is how many people have come out of it, because David Morrissey was in it. Not Neil Morrissey, David Morrissey.
That was a few years ago.
Yeah, and Tom Hardy was in it. And that was the first thing most people had seen Tom Hardy in, and he was great in it. But I can't remember what it was called. And it's got, I think it's got Timothy, I want to say Timothy Dalton. It isn't him, is it?
Penny Dreadful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Timothy Dalton,
the other one. One of the James Bonds. Timothy Dalton. And apparently Billy Piper's in it, but we haven't seen her in it yet. The first episode is really, really good, if a bit slow. But, you know. That's fine.
It's nice for a pilot to be slow. It's usually like, here's all the things, like it.
We haven't quite got a handle on it yet, but we're going to put everything in. It's fine. I really want to get back to Sleepy Hollow, because the pilot for that was really good.
Oh, I haven't watched that either. I started watching Grimm on Netflix. That's my now new guilty pleasure type thing. Very Buffy-esque.
Mm. Apparently EastEnders is quite gripping at the moment.
I've heard that.
If we're doing TV.
Isn't there about to be a murder in Coronation Street?
Yeah, probably.
Why don't they all just move?
EastEnders.
Yeah.
Because that's not...
Because they're economically trapped.
No, that's not how it works.
They could be sitting in some sweet real estate there.
Why do we live in Southampton?
Yeah, but people don't get bombed and murdered and killed on our doorstep every day.
Bummed.
Bombed.
On your doorstep. I don't know. There was a bomb threat right around the corner from where we're trying to buy a place.
Right,
but that's, what, once, and how long have you been here? It's every day.
Do you remember the 80s?
Yeah, oh yeah, I remember the 80s.
It was like a bomb threat every other day. You weren't there, were you?
But no, there's actual bombs in Walford.
Hmm. Are there?
Yeah. Or something happened.
And actual bums.
Explosion, yeah. They've all got bums.
I think
that we know of.
I think that's,
they all sit on people's doorsteps.
That's literally it for the awkward middle bit, isn't it?
Well, we've talked about every television programme there is.
Yes. Oh, Big Brother's starting again.
Fuck me, ragged.
I could go on at length about
fuck,
how much...
Fuck you, ragged.
I could go on, if you like, I could go on at length about how much I'm enjoying Mythbusters.
Okay.
Don't do that.
Mythbusters Jane. Is a television show distributed
Stop
by
talking.
Beyond Distribution.
Jane, can you talk to us about that book, please, dear God?
Yes, I will. So I'm going to talk about Koji Wanaba. Mm-hmm. It's a book by Jamie Smart, who is Nick's arch nemesis.
He is. Although we haven't plotted against each other for a while, so maybe I need to get on that.
Isn't he the man that ruined Desperate Dan?
Yeah, that's him.
Oh dear. It's too soon.
It's
too soon.
What's going on now?
I liked his Desperate Dan. You know, if you haven't read it already...
I have read it. Why do you keep saying it to me? I'm just trying to get to the...
Well, because you're going through it page by page. I'm a little bit concerned
well,
you've not already
how do you know
read it.
I'm not going to do
We're
a...
We're going to fucking sit here for 2 hours while you read
review.
It.
How do you know I'm not going to do that?
Because I've copyrighted them, Jane, and I'd sue your ass.
Because we really don't have enough
time. No, we won't be doing that. Okay.
I tell you what, I've got a 400-page book here. I fucking see your page and I'll raise your mind.
Is a book that was 8 years in the making by Jamie Smart. Is Drawthird by Jamie, and it is a completely pencilled book.
8 years?
Yeah, took him 8 years.
But there's
years.
Like only one picture on every page.
No, there's like, yeah, they're big pictures. So it might take a bit longer to draw. Oh.
He's trying it on there.
It's about Koji. Koji is a very quiet, reserved boy who likes to draw in his diary notebook. He has a very loud girlfriend called Annabelle, but they call her Lies for short.
They call her Lies, not Anna?
No, Lies. She's Annabelle Louise, and they call her Lies. L-H-Y-S.
Right.
And, yeah, they're school age, probably about 14, 15, because Lies is madly in love with Koji and thinks that he's the most gorgeous thing on the world. They have a group of misfit friends. They have Tubbs, who's a bit tubby, who gets himself stuck in things. They have George, and I think Daryl's the other one, and they're just oddballs too. They do weird things. They have a collective misfit group. The book is centred around the Bee Festival. So there's going to be this bee festival, which involves, it's a tradition in the town because many years ago, a witch was burned at the stake and put a plague of bees on the town and everybody was killed. So every year they have a fete to celebrate bees and they have to write a bit about themselves with a picture and reasons why they, shouldn't be beed to death into this big bee and then it gets burned and goes to bee heaven. So they are covered. It's a tradition. What this is really about is friendships, and then it gets really fucking weird. The friendship is ultimately they are not really friends because they are just people that have been shoved together because they don't really fit in with anything around them. Lies is Koji's girlfriend, but she's very loud, quite annoying, stroppy, gets jealous. and he just sort of wants to get on with his own thing. And he obviously likes her, but he's a bit indifferent to her at times. But he just doesn't understand the fuss most of the time. Yeah. It's does get very, very odd. And I really, really liked watching this. I really, really liked reading this half asleep last night and going, what just happened? Mm-hmm. And really just having to take it all in. It's a book that forces you to read it and pay attention to it in a good way. As you want to take it all in. We love Jamie Smart, and this book definitely doesn't disappoint. The art in this is gorgeous, utterly gorgeous. It's on a very nice sort of dated yellowed paper, and it's sort of not coloured. And you can even see some of the pencil lines and in some of the pictures as well, which feels really nice. But
it's really
so
different
pretty.
Style for him, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a bit manga-esque, but yeah, it's no panels. It's sort of, there are different scenarios happening on the pages, but it flows quite nicely and it's not sort of broken up, so it does feel a bit more like a story. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of bugs in this, because mm-hmm. Koichi attracts them for some reason that you may find out about. But mainly it's about the crap of being a teenager and what it's like and how that sort of affects your life, in a sense. That was just a very redundant sentence there. And then, yeah, like I said, everything is weird. It smells nice.
Does it? I've got a copy of it at home, but it's too beautiful and I struggle to sit down with it because it's too beautiful. Which sounds ridiculous, but it's true.
I know what you mean. It's intimidating. Really is. The first page, you're like, am I going to be able to give it the attention it really, really needs? It's so pretty and I really want to read it, but I want to have the anticipation of not having read it yet, that kind of thing.
It's not something I feel like I could read in the toilet.
No.
Where nearly everything else I've read by him, I've read in the toilet, so...
Oh, okay.
Was that more information than anyone really needed?
Is that why he's your arch nemesis?
No. I'm very comfortable in the toilet. It's fine. It's one of my favourite places.
Yeah, but he might not be.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I can't possibly know what he feels like when I'm reading his books. Do you think that Jamie Smart has sympathetic, like he can feel every single book that he has written and produced and drawn and produced and has gone out there? He kind of probably feels something every time someone reads it and reacts to it. So like the whole nonsensical Desperate Dan thing, although most of those people hadn't read it probably, so that probably didn't really impact on him because there weren't people with their actual hands on the comics. But if someone's reading that or Wubble or something like that on the site and they're really liking it and they're really happy, then it probably makes him happy, like beams back to him. But if you'd read that and you started crying, then he'd be really sad. Do you think that's the thing that happens?
I think it might only just be you.
Okay, cool. He feels everything I feel.
Yeah, and you feel everything he feels.
That sounds
about
right.
You cancel each other out. Isn't that what arch nemesis is all about?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's the most preposterous notion I've ever encountered in my life. I'm going to write a letter to my MP. It's made me so angry.
You're going to write a letter to the BMP?
Yeah, it's made me. Well, you're a first generation immigrant, so I don't see what other avenues of recourse I have.
Well, I go back where I came from. What, my office?
Peterborough?
Thank you, Jane.
Yes, you should go out and buy this. It's amazing. Or get someone to buy it for you, as I did.
Or read the copy you've already got.
Yes.
Steal one.
You should have. Don't steal it.
Get it from the library?
Get it from the library, yeah.
Speaking of which...
I finished. Okay. It just smells really nice. That's why
it does. I can smell your wafting. It's quite pleasant.
Sorry, it is a very nice.
No, don't be. It's nice.
I'll close and focus.
It's you now, James. You need to talk about your book. Where did you get it from?
I got it from the library.
is it freaking you out that I haven't set a timer?
A little bit. It's been in Southampton Library at least since the late part of 2007.
Blimey.
It's in pretty good nick, all things considered, actually. It's a hefty tome as well, weighing in at about 440 pages, which is exciting. Makes a very good doorstop.
Setting the scene. This is amazing. Also, this is like This is American Life or something.
Also makes for good reading. It, of course, is Katsuhiro Otomo, his masterpiece, Akira, or Volume 1. Of Akira, which is a post-apocalyptic story set in around about 2030 in a city called Neo Tokyo, which is on a man-made island near the ruins of the old Tokyo, where in the 90s, I believe, what would appear to be an atomic explosion triggers the Third World War.
Yes. Pretty intense.
Indeed. And the action focuses around a young motorcycle gang, and primarily the two main characters in that are Tetsuo Kaneda.
Kaneda
is the leader of the motorcycle gang. Tetsuo crashes when a mysterious old-looking young kid appears in front of him while they're racing in the ruins of old Tokyo.
Drag racing on the bikes.
That sets off a chain of events for Tetsuo that leave him at the end of this tome a very, very distressed and confused young man. Basically, it's a manga sci-fi story that is written really under the shadow of the atomic bomb, mm-hmm. as so many of these are, has sort of aspects of sort of supernatural and psychic ability melded with these themes of nuclear annihilation. And I expect most people listening to this podcast are probably quite familiar with Akira.
At the very least, the film.
Well, as I was going to say, I imagine for most of us, Akira the film was probably the first introduction not only to the story but also to manga, as we called it then. Latterly, it's called anime, and that's what Katsuhiro Otomo is more well known for now. But when I first saw Akira in the very late 80s, cause it was made in 88 before... the series of comic books actually finished. There are 6 volumes. I think the film concentrates on the first 3 or 4.
I'm not sure because I never read all of the volumes.
Because obviously it's not it hadn't been finished by the time the film came out. That will very much be our touchstone. It is still a beautiful movie.
Actually, yeah, I saw a couple of clips of it because there's a live action trailer going around.
Okay,
that some fans have made. Mm. And so I think a lot of people have been revisiting the animated trailer, the original, and it still looks amazing.
I had intended to watch it last night. Actually, what really distressed me was I think I must have bought my DVD version in some time ago, because I remembered it being in this beautiful black pristine box, and it looks really dog-eared now. It's a couple of years since I last watched it, as I had intended to. What was really lovely, I'd never read it before. So what was really nice was, that the film is so faithful to the book in terms of the feel, how the panels move, how the characters act. The characterization in Akira is spot on. The look is absolutely spot on. That beautiful, clear line that we're all so used to now. But I think it's worth bearing in mind as well. 1982, certainly I hadn't seen the closest. We had a conversation about this the other day. The closest I'd come to manga at that point was Battle of the Planets.
Yeah.
Which we were having a discussion for about the other day, and maybe that prepped a generation for the late 80s manga or anime explosion that Akira was sort of the leader of, in my opinion. You know, he's the one that brought me to awareness.
Akira and the Ghost, and I think Akira was the first one, but Ghost in the Shell came out roughly the same time as well, the first movie.
Sure. It's very interesting as well, if you think, obviously, 1982, this started. You hold that up against maybe American comic books, superhero comic books at the time. The level of sophistication in the storytelling here is staggering.
Mm.
I mean, this reads as well now. I mean, if this was being written now, it would be no less entertaining. I can't believe I've not read it, to be honest with you, at this point. It is such a well-put-together piece of work, so beautifully realised, so thrilling. It flows amazingly well. It was, to say, 440 pages. It felt almost intimidating, sort of, starting to read it. It's a big, hefty piece of work. I couldn't put it down. It works so beautifully. It's... remarkable to think some of the work that was being done on the other side of the Atlantic at the time. And given, you know, we think, I think geeks in this country, we look in that direction for our inspiration. You think about what was being done with the medium at the time in Japan, it's laughable. But it's really easy to see here the influence it's had. It's easy to forget that this was so different from how things looked at the time. But now it looks contemporary. If you get one,
because it's incredibly slick. The art and presentation is really, really good.
Because there's a generation of artists now working in the medium across the world that were influenced by books of this ilk. So, I liked it so much that I immediately went and put all 6 volumes on my Amazon wishlist, which I intend to now collect and read.
It's huge.
It is lovely. It was really nice. There's some stuff in terms of Tetsuo. I don't remember. I remember Tetsuo being more sympathetic, less brattish in the movie. he's a lot more maniacal in here. I don't think the bit where he becomes leader of the clown gang, who do feature in the film.
They're in it, right? You see them, but there's lots of stuff that appears in the film as a nod to the books that they don't flesh out.
And the drug references are a lot more overt in the book than they are in the movie.
Funnily enough, the movie is one of the first times where I really started to think about my prejudice against dubbed stuff.
Okay.
Because in the subtitled version, it's very unclear what's happening in the first 10 minutes. With all those where they're buying pills and stuff right at the beginning. Mm-hmm. But in the dubbed version, I guess because they actually had to convince actors to say those words, they're referring to sweets. But you're no longer trying to work out what's going on, so you kind of know they're talking about drugs and they're taking the drugs and stuff. So I don't know. It might be something to do with it. We weren't quite geared up for
it. I always find it's a bit difficult. I don't really like watching it dubbed.
Yeah.
Because you don't get the full Kaneda Tetsuo if you're watching it dubbed.
Yeah, maybe.
Which in my mind when I think of it, Akira, 90% of the movie
is those two shouting
their names at each other. I've never had character names go in my head quite as effectively as Akira.
Hardly even meet Akira.
He's an elusive little bugger, isn't he?
Yeah, he's in it, but you hardly ever see him.
It is revealed what Akira is, I think, at the end of this. The Colonel as well, his character feels a little bit more realised in this book as well. So there's definitely more depth to it, but it felt so familiar, it's uncanny. Still available. They're about £13 and £16 a volume at the moment. They're huge. If you haven't seen the film, for Christ's sake,
watch the film.
I find it hard to believe there'd be anyone listening to this that hasn't seen the film. But if you've not, see it. It is one of the very best animated movies ever made.
It's a bit weird and kind of makes lots of shortcuts towards the end that make it a bit like the end of 2001. Mm-hmm. But definitely worth it. What I wanted to say, though, when you were talking about it is, what's weird is, even though that was the introduction that most people in this country certainly had to manga, and the film was the first introduction people had to anime.
Which we did call manga. It's easy to forget we called it manga.
Because the company bringing them out was called manga in this country, and they did everything, they were the whole line. It's still kind of, I think, weird in manga, in that Otomo is a lot of people, I think, over there are now influenced by him. He doesn't draw like anybody else.
No, and he changed. It was also very unusual for sci-fi themes to be used in manga at the time as well. Oh. He broke the tradition and created something completely new all by himself, a real groundbreaker that, as I say, the book is so fresh and feels so contemporary. It was really took me aback, to be honest, with reading it. I was really surprised.
Now I want to buy it.
Oh, it's wonderful.
The Marvel Epic started putting it out. Yeah. The reason I haven't read it is they started putting it out and it was coloured and the volumes were only coming out every few months and they were only a little bit at a time and it just got too expensive. And
the colouring, though, was overseen by Otomo himself, wasn't it?
And it was really good. I think it was by a guy called Steve Olif.
One of the very first examples of computerized colouring.
Mm. Yeah, but it was really sophisticated.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
and but it just came out too slowly. It was like a drip feed for a story that's spread out. Well, it was a real drip feed.
Apparently, the delays for that was Otomo redrawing. Mm. Apparently, sort of sewed it up. So,
man, it's awesome.
Damn him!
Thank you, James. That's amazing. So what are you guys up to this week? Voting?
Voting tonight?
Yeah, I think I will.
Bank holiday this Monday.
Quite excited about that.
That'll be good.
Amy's going away for a week. So.
Got some voiceover work I need to get on to.
Amy's going away this weekend. They're going away on Monday. So lots of masturbating by the time next week's show comes out. It's all very exciting.
Lovely.
Yeah, it's pretty lovely.
I won't be here next week.
Oh.
I'm going off.
Off? Are you going away?
No, I'm not going away. I have to do work thing. Oh, and I start my promotion the week after. So that'll be exciting.
That is exciting. Congratulations on your promotion.
Thank you. Apparently I have to do more work.
That's
not how I understand promotions working.
No, I thought she got more money, more coffee, less responsibility. Mm. Apparently, it doesn't work like that.
It doesn't work like that here. Here is in this room right now. No, I mean at this place where we are, the building geographically. Fucking everyone knows what I mean. I don't need to clarify it. God, it makes me angry sometimes, some of the stuff that comes out of my mouth. So anyway, thank you, listener. You're awesome. Thank you, contributors. You're great. Thank you, yous guys.
Thank you.
To see you again, Jane.
Thank you.
And we have to go now.
We do.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. When do I do my audible.com recommendation?
I will not propagate grape culture. I feel a bit weird about that whole chunk there.
We'll just ignore
it.
So
I might just cut it out.
No, don't cut it out. Just ignore it.
Fucking hell. You idiot, I might cut it out. That's the catchphrase now, isn't it? I might cut it out. What?
Jane,
it's like
you have
in some sort of bloody dictatorship. I tell you, this is how the people in fucking Siberia felt. People marching about going, oh, I might cut this out! Because that's how they spoke.
What?
Like generic Germans.
Shall I set a clock for this particular rant?
What I'm saying to you is you are very much like a conflated Stalag commander and whatever the Russian equivalent. No, that was the Russian one, and the German equivalent was. That's what you're like.
Who?
Me. He means
both
me.
Both of you. I can do longer. All right, I've got another 25 seconds.
You're enabling so him.
There's a couple of other things I'd like to take into consideration. I ain't started on you yet. with your fucking grapes.
You encouraged me to
by throwing projectiles at me. Fuck a duck.
Okay, good. Now, can we move on, please?
That was quite cathartic. Thank you for that.